Einen wunderschönen guten Morgen. A good morning to everyone. Sehr schön, dass Sie so zahlreich am dritten Sprachsalztag, dem Sonntag, zu diesem so unchristlich frühen Gespräch erschienen sind. Wir haben uns überlegt, dass wir multimedial beginnen, nämlich etwas musikalisch und mit bewegten Bildern. Das werden Sie jetzt gleich sehen.
Oh, how can I stop?
Good morning, Jan.
Good morning. Guten Morgen.
So what has become of the drug-free parliament? Which sounds most disturbing for Iceland.
Yeah. Well, I'm sorry to say we have not been successful. There are still drugs in the parliament. Maybe it was a bit overambitious. 2030. Sounds drug-free parliament, 2030 is the new.
Also Sie hören es, im Jahr 2030 soll das isländische Parlament endlich drogenfrei sein. Wir haben uns gedacht, wir sprechen Englisch und ich übersetze das für Sie so mehr oder minder gelungen ins Deutsche, obwohl ich eigentlich im Stillen davon ausgehe, dass Sie alle des Englischen mehr als mächtig sind. So, we're going to talk in English and I'm going to translate it into German. First, when a US president leaves the Oval Office, he is still called Mr. President afterwards until the end of his days. So, is it okay when I call you Mr. Mayor?
Oh, yeah. Yes, it's okay.
Also wenn US-Präsidenten, wenn die Amtszeit eines US-Präsidenten vorbei ist, dann werden sie trotzdem immer noch Mr. President genannt, selbst wenn sie Bush mit Vornamen heißen. Deshalb werde ich John dann Herrn Bürgermeister nennen. So, it was quite surprising for me to notice, when I prepared our talk, that Iceland is so close to Panama this year.
Yes, we're very... very close, Iceland and Panama. A lot of friendship between two countries.
Friendly files.
Yes.
And friendly bank accounts.
Yeah, a lot of people travel. Of course, both countries are islands, and people are traveling back and forth. Mm-hmm.
So, I'm not quite sure who is right at the moment Prime Minister of Iceland. They are changing so fast this year.
the Prime Minister of Iceland, the former Prime Minister of Iceland, was one of the people mentioned in the Panama Papers. And he didn't want to admit it. Until he was very ruthlessly ambushed by a Swedish television program, and they dropped this question about his company called Vintris. Mm-hmm. He had a company called Vintris in Panama, and. And he stood up and he left the interview, and that became a huge scandal. And he had to step down as prime minister, and it was rather tragic.
Mm-hmm. The most vital role in Iceland is the hot pool. What is so special about the Icelandic hot pools?
It's it's I mean the public swimming baths are a vital part of everyday life in Iceland, and usually wherever you are there is a swimming pool in walking distance. Takes me, for example, where we live in Reykjavik, it takes me about 5 to 10 minutes to walk to a swimming pool. The public swimming pools in Iceland are very high standard, I would say. It's almost like a spa because it's so nice, but it's very affordable, it's very cheap, especially for children and elderly people. and so it's tradition, it's a local tradition to go to the swimming pool every now and then, and there are hot pots because we have excessive hot water. We have so much hot water, we don't know what to do with it. So we make hot pots, and I would say that the hot pots in Iceland, they traditionally serve the same purpose as the pub or Kneipe, or Kneipe in Germany. It's a place because beer was banned in Iceland until 1989, yeah. So there weren't any pubs, but swimming pools, and that's the place where common people and everyday people can come together and discuss things in the hot pots. And because everybody is wearing swimsuits, you cannot judge people that much from how they dress. So you have to try and judge them, you know, have a picture of people through what they're saying, actually what they're so nuclear physicist and shoemaker and carpenter can sit and discuss matters and in the hot pots you can start a conversation with strangers, and people do. They will ask you, you know, in the hot pot you're sitting there and people will ask you, what do you think about the Prime Minister? And you can say, yeah, well, I don't like it. No, neither do I. So they will, you know, chit-chat. And sometimes people will even give speeches in the hot pots. People will start rambling and you know, wah, 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 and just suddenly you're sitting in a hot pot listening to somebody have a speech. So it's very special and it's very Icelandic, and it's but it serves this purpose, I think. Mm-hmm. You know, the sometimes when I see a television show that is, you know, happens in England a long time ago, and people will, you know, living somewhere in the country and go to the pub. I I get this swimming pool. You know, and people go to the pub. So I think it serves a similar purpose. Mm-hmm. It's a public corner.
Mm-hmm. Also vor allem der Hotpot, also das Heißwasserbecken auf Saunatemperatur ist eine urdemokratische Einrichtung auf Island, der Insel, wo bis 1989 Bier noch illegal war. Beer was really illegally banned until 89?
Yes. Beer was banned, but Aukavit was okay. And even, okay.
No, please, I want to hear exactly this.
Yeah, it's so silly. They banned beer. Beer was banned, and there was only two or three types of red wine and two or three types of white wine. And then there was an endless selection of Aukavit. I don't know what the idea.
Und in den Hotpots geht es eben urdemokratisch zu. Man sieht jemanden nicht an der Kleidung bereits an, welchen Beruf er hat oder welchem Stand er angehört. Und da werden eben auch große Reden geschwungen, so wie in Großbritannien in den Pubs oder in Deutschland in der Kneipe. And I even read that the Prime Minister once gave an interview totally naked in the hot pot.
Oh.
The reporter as well was totally naked. I don't know about the cameraman.
Now that's not unusual. And this is something that politicians will do when they want to blend in with the public. You know, I also go to the swimming pools, you know. Yeah. If you want to interview me, you have to come to the swimming pool, because I go to the swimming pool like everybody else, but they don't. You rarely see them. I did when I was the mayor. I continue to go to the swimming pools, but it's complicated when you are a person in office like that, because people will blah, 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 blah. Yeah. And I would get the most ridiculous questions from people. I mean, not least the elderly people, because I would get questions like, what is this container doing at the end of my street? what? Well, there's this, you put this big container at the end of my street. Oh, I did. Me? Okay. What is it doing there? I don't know. You're supposed to know. Yeah, I know. I will find out. One street light is not working. I got a lot of that. There is a street light. It's the third street light from the corner of there. It's something wrong with it. It keeps blinking. Okay, I'll check it out. So it's common talk, you know, like, so it's hard for politicians, because it's, you know.
You need a lot of paper at the panel. And we saw your internet spot, thanks to Tina Turner.
Yeah.
And especially the spot gave a huge boost to the best party.
Yes.
The slogan of the best party, was vote for the best party because it is the best party. And you even promised free towels.
Yes.
In the hot pools.
Yes.
Was that successful?
That was a huge success. Free towels and. That because in the swimming pools there are no free towels. You have to bring your own towel, and I wanted to change that. I was not successful in that. I would have liked to be able to have free towels, because that's how it is in a spa.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you never have to bring your own towel when you go to a spa. towels are included. So, and this video, because so many people that joined me in the best party, my friends, were and are musicians, and they wanted to make a campaign song, and they were really excited about it. We have to make a campaign song. And I didn't like the idea. And I said, no, we shouldn't make a campaign song. But they did. And this campaign song was a complete and total game changer in the campaign. When it was released, it went viral. Overall and all over, and I could just sense the support for the best party just growing and growing, and it was absolutely monumental. This song.
And it's still fun to watch and sing along.
Yeah,
you were. 4 years mayor of Reykjavik. Sie waren 4 Jahre lang Bürgermeister. And then you stepped down voluntarily. You didn't want a second term. Why? Although your chances were rather high,
yes,
and promising,
yes,
to be re-elected as mayor.
Yeah. No, it was never my plan to start a political career. it's a lot of pressure. It's a very tough job. Mm-hmm. And it put a lot of pressure on me and my family. And I have a young son who is now 11. And I wanted to be able to spend time with him and with my family, when it was getting closer to the election, many very good and very intelligent people approached me, and met with me and encouraged me to continue, said you cannot just leave now, you know, we have to, it's really just starting, and it was a very sweet thing that my son said. I discussed this with him, and I told him, I wanted to quit the job to be able to spend more time with him, and people were interested in me to continue, and he said, I think you should quit. He said, and after all, I mean, anybody can be a mayor, but there is only one man who can be my dad. That was very sweet. And after that, there was no return. And I also didn't want the best party to continue. So I eliminated the best. I dissolved it, and the people that some people in the best party, they continued, started a new political party called Bright Future, and they are now in parliament.
Also der Grund, wieso er nicht für eine zweite Amtszeit als Bürgermeister angetreten ist, war eigentlich sein Sohn, sein heute 11-jähriger Sohn, mit dem er das damals besprochen hat, und er sagte, Bürgermeister gibt es viele, aber ich habe nur einen Vater, und deshalb wollte er mehr Zeit mit seinem Sohn verbringen. Die Best Party existiert heute nicht mehr, die hat John aufgelöst, er hat sich dann neu konstituiert unter dem Namen Bright Future. Bright Future, literally meaning or also a satire?
No, it's serious.
Serious, okay.
Yeah, it's a liberal democratic party, like center.
Okay. Yeah. And you've been working for, I think, about 2 years now on a new TV series.
Yes.
Which is called The Mayor.
Yeah.
Seit 2 Jahren arbeitet John an einer TV-Serie mit dem Titel Der Bürgermeister. And you are not only writing it, but you will be playing in it. You will act as the mayor.
Yes.
A totally fictional character, isn't it?
It's totally fictional, yes. There is a film production company in Reykjavik, and the people there asked me if I could write a sitcom, television series about city politics. And I wrote this television series, it's 10 episodes, and it's about a man who is the mayor of Reykjavik, and I play the man. And I don't change my look that much, but I only change my personality. He is not me. He looks like me, but he's not me. And I also direct it. So we have finished filming, and I'm now editing. It's post-production, and it's going to be premiered in October. Next month.
Next month.
Next month.
Yeah.
And and it's the first Icelandic television series that takes place in the administration. It's something that I think people are excited about. they want to learn, yeah, want to see how it's. How it really is.
How is it really? Boring? Aching?
Well, yes. I mean, it's complicated and boring. and maybe that's one of the reasons why people are not so interested in it. Mm-hmm. You know, because it can get extremely boring, and you have to be extremely patient to be able to survive in an administrative culture. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, you know, it can be very exciting. Mm-hmm. Sometimes, you know, but long meetings. I had meetings that would go on for days. And people would just sleep in the meetings. Yeah, that was when we were trying to make a budget for the city in the maybe the 2 years after the financial crisis, and people were just they worked 24/7. And people would sleep, you know, with a sleeping bag and mattress on the floor. They would sleep for maybe 2 hours, mm-hmm. and somebody would wake them, and they would start calculating again. And so it was exhausting, but also exciting.
Mm-hmm. I read, also Jonathan erzählt das. Es auch tagelange Sitzungen in der Stadtverwaltung gegeben hat, wo Mitarbeiter schon den Schlafsack dabei hatten und für 2 Stunden einfach in den Schlafsack gekrochen sind, dann wieder aufgeweckt wurden und sich sofort an den nächsten Bilanzentwurf gesetzt haben. Und es wird in seiner TV-Serie spielt er die Hauptrolle, aber der Charakter ist ganz anders. The character, the mayor in the fictional mayor in your series, is very fond of German cars, isn't he?
Oh yes.
The one with the star, or
the one with the star.
The one with the star.
Okay. Yeah. yeah, he wants to. He wants to get a car. With a fridge.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so you can keep cold drinks. Because he's a drinker. So, He's an interesting character.
How can politics become cool for younger people, apart from the best party? Should we all become Jon Gnarr?
No. I mean, politics are interesting, really. And it's all about how we organize ourselves and how we organize our communities and how we distribute values among each other so I mean politics are very important I mean it's like you know becoming it's like parenthood like becoming a parent you know it's you know people can say that when you become a parent you become very boring and uninteresting and sometimes that's the children's view on their parents you know it's just they're so boring but I think maybe through television maybe we can try and change this negative image of politics to make young people more interested in it. I would say when I'm asked what I think is lacking in politics, how can we improve our politics? And I say that we need young women, especially young women to participate in politics. Intelligent, educated young women. But at the same time, when I meet with intelligent, educated young women, I sometimes find it hard to encourage them to go into politics. So, because it can be very aggressive, mm-hmm. you know. I would say masculine or manly. Mm-hmm. It's so much a man's world. But I think we can, and we really have to. We have to get young people interested in politics. Because there are so many, serious issues that we have to deal with. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, we have to make it cool. We have made it very uncool. I mean, that's also partly the media, because the media only wants to show you the negative sides of politics. Mm-hmm. And I mean, if you're a politician and you do a mistake, the media is all over you. And if you're a politician and you make a success, it's not that much interest. Mm-hmm. So and that's not necessarily right. Mm-hmm. So from a perspective of a young person that you know sees the news every now and then, it's always negative. It's just people making constant mistakes.
Uh,
Also, Jon hat gesagt, was in der Politik fehlt, sind vor allem junge, engagierte Frauen, die die Politik anders machen, weg von der, vom männlichen Konkurrenzdenken gehen. Und wie es wieder cool wird, liegt eben zum Teil auch an den Medien, die wirklich nur das Negative herauspicken oder, wie das gestern Abend auch John Cleese kurz angedeutet hat, eben nur ausschließlich das Negative präsentieren. John Cleese last night said almost the very same thing about the media, just picking out the negative or the mortal things, how many people died, how many accidents happened. You once said in an interview, there are many similarities between you and Frodo from Tolkien's The Lord of the Rings. The one who wore the ring. So how many Mordors are there to conquer for you?
Well, there was only this one. There was only this one ring. I during my time in City Hall, I often thought of Frodo, and also what I hadn't thought about that much before I became the mayor, it was the power. You know, you have this political power, but power is also a bit like the ring in Lord of the Rings. if you put it on, it drains you. It's addictive, or it can be addictive. It's like a drug. And I think many people are hooked on this drug, the power drug. They don't take it like some people take drugs. You know, it's not a pill or something. It's just energetic, and also I was like Frodo and sort of an outsider, unlikely hero. I felt, you know, by finishing four terms as the mayor, I got to throw the ring in Mount Doom,
Also ich habe ihn gefragt, er hat sich mal selber als in einem Interview als Frodo aus dem Herrn der Ringe von Tolkien charakterisiert und hat jetzt beschrieben, dass Macht eben auch eine Droge ist, nicht nur sein kann, sondern zur Droge wird, weil man merkt, dass man Macht hat. Deshalb hat er am Schluss in seinem letzten Jahr als Bürgermeister dann eben auch den Ring abgestreift und ihn zurückgeworfen. We now know that the mayor in your TV series will be fiction.
Yes.
And in your autobiography, you write on page 2, writing about your own life is fiction. Besides you, Sie sehen hier ein Bewerbungsfoto. It's an application photograph for the mayor campaign. So, at least there will be hope for me to become mayor one day. So, how much fiction is in writing one's own life?
Yeah.
Wie viel Erfindung steckt in einer eigenen Autobiographie?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't always know what is fiction and what is reality, and which is more real, reality or fiction. And sometimes I get the notion that fiction is more real than the so-called reality. Our friend, she was a very old woman, and she was dying. She was 97. Yeah, 97 years old, and we went to visit her, and she said, all this is not real. She pointed around to them. It's not real. What is real is the theater. Theater is reality, and this is just. memory is creativity, you know, whenever in the brain, whenever we remember something, the brain has to put it all together, and it's not like a file stuck in one place in our brain. It's bits and pieces from here and there. And so every time we remember something, we have to remake it. Mm-hmm. Or the brain remakes it. So if my brain wants me to remember something in a certain way, it's for a reason. There is a reason for it, and as I am writing a lot about my family and very honestly, I would say, openly, I want to give me and everybody the benefit of the doubt, and. My father, he died in 2008, and he read my first book, and there is a lot about him in the book, and he was asked if he read the book, and he said, yeah, I read it, and so what do you think? And he said, well, it's his version of the story, he said. So it's my version of the story, and it's the truth according to me. You know, I'm not lying anything. I'm not making anything up. But you know, I can be wrong. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, like my parents, I would sometimes, you know, like many people, I would listen to my parents arguing about how things happened. Like, and then he said that you shouldn't be there. No, it wasn't him. It was his wife that had just come that said to you, no. I chose to call it a fictitious memoir, mm-hmm. because in my view, it's not to make it weaker, but to strengthen it. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Also Jon bezeichnet seine autobiografischen Bücher als fiktionale Selbstbeschreibung. Als sein Vater sein erstes Buch las, sein Vater ist 2008 verstorben. Hatte das Buch gelesen und hat gesagt, das ist deine Version der Geschichte. Besides, your father was a walking contradiction. He was a police officer and a hard-stanch communist.
Yes.
Pinning photographs of Stalin and Molotov on the walls.
Yeah, and Brezhnev.
And Brezhnev? Mm. How come?
Well, my father, he was born in 1918. At the end of the First World War, and in extreme poverty, unimaginable poverty, he didn't get any education, formal education, he came to Reykjavik when he was around 20 years old, and he wanted to learn to be, he wanted to study to be an actor, and but he didn't, couldn't afford school, so he went looking for a job, and they were hiring for the police, and my father was extremely, he was a strong man, it was like really, I mean his hands were like my feet, and it was very, very big and strong, and the police were hiring strong men, so he got a job at the police, but at the same time he was getting involved with the communist movement, and he was fascinated with the idea of communism, and so he was always looked down on in the police by you know his superiors, and never got, you know, he never became a sergeant or anything, was just a common policeman for 44 years when he worked there. And this is very interesting, when Iceland after the World War, when Iceland became a NATO member, there were protests in Reykjavik because people were upset, or some people were upset about it, and the police were called out, but my father was taken aside and put in a prison cell because they didn't trust him because he was on the other side. So it was it's a contradiction, and I to this day I don't understand how it worked out for him, because he really liked his job, and his, you know, his friends at work really liked him, and he was a, you know, solid guy, and when I was growing up, we subscribed to this magazine that was not a magazine, like newspaper, a weekly newspaper that was news from the USSR, and I would read this, and he would, you know, sometimes tell me about, you know, how life was much better in the Soviet Union than in America, and he really despised America, so every time when they changed the general secretaries in the Communist Party, my father would get a framed picture of the new general secretary, and it was nothing that my mother liked. She didn't like these pictures, and my father wanted to hang them up in the living room, and my mother said, no, it's not hanging up in the living room. And he would say, it's a gift to me from the Soviet Union. I must be able to hang it up. It's not hanging up here, she said. So he would hang all his pictures up in the cellar. And I remember so very well when I started smoking, when I was around 13 or 14, I would go down to the cellar and I would sit there smoking with Brezhnev and everything.
And they were very serious, like, you shouldn't smoke.
No, I know. So it was, and they would go, my parents, they would go on vacations to Bulgaria. I never got to go with them. They would go themselves, and that was a big thing for my father to go to Bulgaria, that was at the time when most people were going to Mallorca or something, but my father went to Bulgaria. And then he would find someone who had went to Mallorca and have an argument with him. Which was better, Bulgaria or Mallorca? And he would say, yeah, we just came back from a vacation and blah, blah, blah. Where did you go? I went to Bulgaria and to Sofia and the other person would say, yeah, we just came back from a vacation in Mallorca. Mallorca! And then he would start an argument. And he really loved to have arguments with people. And yet he's was such a, I mean, he's one of the strangest people I've ever known. Like, if you were, he despised America and he despised Denmark. Denmark, because Iceland was a Danish colony until 1944. And so if he met anyone that was going to Denmark, he would pick an argument with complete strangers even. And I remember our friend, very good friend of ours, she's half Icelandic Danish, and she was at our home, and my father was there, and she said, yeah, I'm going to Copenhagen tomorrow. And he was like, Copenhagen? Why on earth would you go to Copenhagen? And she said, well, I have family there. There's nothing. What is in Copenhagen? There's nothing. Nothing in Copenhagen. And then he said, you should go to Trondheim in Norway. It was the weirdest. And you should go to Trondheim and see the big cathedral in Trondheim. And then he started talking, telling her about Trondheim and insisting that she would change her travel plans. And instead of going to visit her family in Copenhagen, she should see the old chapel in Trondheim in Norway. It was just so insane. And he was like, yeah, compulsive obsessive, I would say. He was compulsive obsessive with, and I'm a bit like that too.
But one of the heroes is neither from Denmark nor from Norway, but from Sweden, Pippi Langstrump.
Oh yeah, yeah. A big influence. Pippi Langstrump, yeah. I mean, and I think Pippi Langstrump is an amazing role model for children because she's a girl and at the time, I mean, when I was growing up as a child, I had huge respect for Pippi. So it's you know.
I think that's a good sentence to end with.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Oh, so time flies.
Time flies. Mm-hmm. Vielen Dank für Ihr zahlreiches Kommen. Ein ganz, ganz herzlichen Dank. Thank you very, very much for coming to Hagen, to Schmorsals, Jon, and Yoga.
It's been a pleasure.
Die schlechte Nachricht ist, dass alle Bücher von Jon in der Buchhandlung Widerrehen im Hotel ausverkauft sind. Completely sold out.
Yeah.
I think first thing ever happens at Schmorsals. What a compliment, what an applause. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.